Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Monday, August 7th, the Vail Dance Festival comes to you. Don't miss the live stream of Monday's Now Premieres program at 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Visit veildance.org to enjoy an evening of world premieres from the festival's all-star casts of choreographers and dancers. You have heard them all right here on Conversations on Dance. Now catch them live from the Vail Dance Festival stage on Monday, August 7th. Link in the description of this episode for more information. This episode was recorded live at the Manor Vail Lodge. Conversations on Dance at the Vail Dance Festival is generously underwritten by the Town of Vail. I'm Rebecca King Ferraro.
And I'm Michael Sean Breeden, and you're listening to Conversations on Dance. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Conversations on Dance here at the Vail Dance Festival. My name is Michael Sean Breeden, and I'll be your host today. It is sadly my last day with you guys, but it's been such a wonderful year. And I just want to say thank you, everyone, for coming out. Tomorrow, we will have a guest host who is in the audience today. It's Kate Penner. So please come out and support Kate. We love Kate, who has been a guest host on the pod several other times. Last year, did several events with me. So you are in good hands, rest assured. Today I have two incredible artists who are making premieres for tomorrow's Now Premieres program, Kyle Abraham and Melissa Toogood. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks indeed.
So, you know, this is, I feel like the Sunday before the Now Premieres program is usually, can be a little tense. So I'm just curious where we're at. You know, at the Vail Dance Festival, it's famously things are down to the wire. Damien gets inspired and wants, you know, a new dancer in this part, or maybe we just make something up like, you know, the day of, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm wondering where
spend the day avoiding him.
So where are we with our pieces right now? How are we feeling? What's left to do? T minus 24 hours, basically.
I'm ready to be on stage with it. I feel like for me, I need to work on spacing and be with musicians. But I'm a lot less experienced, so I probably should have a lot more work to do.
I think I'm trying to make sure the order is the right order. It's all storytelling, even in its most vast abstraction. There's still some sense of like direction that I'm trying to make sure is right. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to kind of play with that as much as I can in the amount of time we have allotted.
Right. So let's go back a little bit for anyone that might not have listened to our very good episodes that we've done with Melissa and Kyle in the past. And just to kind of hear some background on who, on what you were like as performers, where we trained and that sort of things, to just to know like what is informing your choreographic work. So let's start with Melissa.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm most known for dancing for Merce Cunningham. So I am Cunningham trained, but I do a Graham floor all the time still. I trained in Graham and Lamone at New World School of the Arts. But really, I'm a Tanowitz dancer. I've worked with Pam for a very long time. So I'm only very recently come to making work, mainly because people keep asking me to, not because I have a very strong desire to, but I feel like I've had to work hard to get Pam and Merce out of my head. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pam got mad at me. She's like, you don't tell me you're making stuff. I have to read about it in the New York Times. And, and I'm like, she's like, I could have helped you. I'm like, you already have. Like, being in the studio with you every day for 16 years, she's helped me immensely. But I feel like I'm also really, as a dance maker, I'm not comfortable calling myself a choreographer, have been really informed by working with Sally Silvers too, the way that she develops material. So I've worked with a lot of people, and I feel like all of that history is informing me in a different way. But I've had to, because I've worked with so many people and I've spent so long being in other people's heads, the hard thing has been to try and find my own voice. So like I had a residency in Colorado actually last year, just before Vail, at the launch pad in Carbondale, and that was like a really amazing time for me to just, without any pressure of a performance, just to see how do I make work? Do I like making work? Can I make work? Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still in that place.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned this, but saying like I have to get Merce and Pam out of my head. Mm-hmm. I think about that all the time when you're working with choreographers who you admire so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's certainly why I never tried my hand at choreography. I was just like, I'm dancing Balanchine Ballets 24/7. How could I ever offer something? So how do you kind of fight that? How do you find your own voice within that? What are some ways that you kind of divorce yourself from your experience as a dancer?
Well, honestly, I hate improvising, but I've been improvising a lot. Just to see like what naturally kind of comes out. And I think the way that I coordinate movement when I'm improvising is very much affected by Merce. But then, you know, as I mentioned, Sally Silver, she is an incredibly talented improviser, and she has decades of VHS tapes of herself improvising, and she would go through and like make things for me and be like, okay, 3 seconds from this video and then 4 seconds from this one. And how she puts them together has really influenced me. But I think trying to take things from them that are helpful, but then the actual feeling of the step, I don't know, I'm just trying to go on instinct. But Pam has really affected me in terms of thinking about structure. She always talks about having something to hang her hat on, and so like having a structure in mind for me to start with really helped. But I think one of the biggest things has been the dancers that I'm in the studio with. They're very good cheerleaders. They're really like been very supportive. I don't know if I really answered your question, because I'm still figuring it out.
There's so much there. I want to get back into process for sure, but let's bring Kyle in and hear about your own background as a performer.
Sure. I got to say, before I even get into me, Melissa Toogood is one of my favorite dancers of all time. I'm. Yes. And I say that even when I'm not in her presence. You know, for me starting off, I started dancing pretty late, when I was about 17, but I was a big rave and hip hop kid. So spending a lot of time in social dance practices, which to me really are the root of improvisation. So when I started studying more codified forms like Cunningham and Lamone and Martha Graham technique and ballet, of course, not of course, but in ballet, all of it was movement for me. So, I think also starting at 17, I just thought I was going to be a choreographer. I didn't think there was space for me to be a dancer. So for me, learning all of the information that I was and those different techniques, it was just more information for me to kind of explore and to expand upon what I knew in the social dance vernacular. So that was a big part of the journey. And then studying in a university setting, I just really tried to make as much as I could while I was in school, and of course learn as much as I could from all of my teachers, both in choreography and in dance technique.
Right, yeah. So Melissa, how did you first come to choreograph? And it seemed like you were a little bit more reluctant. Kyle's like, I'm doing this. We're doing both in tandem, but maybe it took a while for you to get that.
Yeah. During the pandemic, Miko, the artistic director at Boston Ballet, reached out to me, and I was like, no. And there I got emails being like, could you just have a meeting with him? And he talked me into it. He basically gave me complete permission to fail. So I was like, okay, then I should try. Mm-hmm. So I made a piece for Boston Ballet. Started in the fall of 2020, and then it got pushed back. We premiered the piece March last year. That he was really committed to it happening live, not on the internet, even though most of it was made on the internet via Zoom. And also Diana Beyer from New York Theater Ballet. Again, in 2020, her dance was really passionately trying to produce something live. So they did a show of like solos and duets. And so I made a solo for one of the dancers over Zoom. and then she reached out to me and was trying to get me to make a piece for the company, and I kept saying no. And then she emailed me introducing me to the composer David K. Israel. Mm-hmm. I was like, this lady's smart. She got me hooked because I had a great conversation with him. Mm-hmm. And so then when Peter Gilbert, who is really involved with Launchpad in Colorado, had kept asking me to come back because we've gotten to know each other over the years that I've been here in Vail with no pressure. So I was like, sure, I'll come and see how it goes. And I didn't hate what I made. And so then, you know, Damien and I were talking about what I would do this year, and he agreed to let me see where that went. Hmm.
I think this would be a good time to talk about your relationship, both of you, to music, and what kind of... So obviously you're responding to David Israel's compositions.
Yes.
What do you, each of you, find to be danceable music? What inspires you to create?
It's all danceable.
Everything's danceable?
Yeah, everything
really,
is danceable.
Kyle?
I agree. I think, I mean, one of the big things for me is that music is another player in the space. Mm-hmm. And if you are even accessing the possibilities of silence, that is also very valid and important. I think even every composer probably at some point in the score, there's a moment of rest. Mm-hmm. So recognize the importance of silence, recognize the importance of all different instrumentation is all valid. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah, I said, I started dancing in kind of hip hop and rave culture, but I grew up playing the cello, French horn, piano. All of that was part of the history for me growing up as a kid. So all of that experience was happening at the same time that MTV was first coming on. Mm-hmm. So it's always been just a love of music for me and the possibility of movement. And I think a lot of the ways in which I'm choreographing is sometimes meant to highlight the music and maybe have someone's ear pick up on something that they wouldn't have heard or seen otherwise. Right.
So if everything is danceable, how do you pare that down to what you want to actually make?
Zoinks! I think it changes all the time. I think one thing that I'm excited about is not really being predictable. So I think if I'm making a work to, you know, Jay-Z, the next work might be to Rachmaninoff. Mm-hmm. Because it's fun for me to kind of play with an audience's expectation. I think there's obviously certain movement, vocabulary, or information that I have that I'm trying to put on stage that might kind of make its way in, regardless of whether or not I'm working with a ballet company or a contemporary company. But the way I'm thinking about music in particular, I think in some ways it's inspired by who I'm going to be collaborating with as dancers. Who is their audience? How much space is there from the audience to the stage? Mm-hmm. How much time do I have to make the piece? Because I think that's another big component that people don't talk about that often. I think everyone gets excited about the notion of commissioned new music, but as choreographers, we don't get but so much time to work with that music, especially with the realized instrumentation. We're usually working with a computerized digital version of a cello. It's like this weird sound that's supposed to represent a cello or a flute or something. And we don't get the real music sometimes until the week or two before the show or even days before when you're hearing it being performed live by an orchestra.
I'm going to hear mine today.
You're hearing yours for the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the show's tomorrow. Yeah, so all of that I think is part of the thing that I have to consider when I'm thinking about music and how best to serve whatever it is the vision might be, if I even know the vision, because sometimes it may start with music.
Right. That's you've hit upon an interesting point to me, like the idea of, you know, a Rachmaninoff score, you could have been acquainted with that for, at this point, decades, you know, but how, so do you feel more comfortable with that sort of thing, each of you? Like, do you like to use music that it's like, you know, embedded in your brain, you know, you really, really know it? Or is it kind of exciting to have this moment where Melissa's just hearing her score for the first time today?
Do you want to go first? Or
sure. I mean, like I said, I'm much, much less experienced in terms of making work. So I think that's where Merce is still a big influence on me. It's like I'm listening to it, but I'm also not listening to it. Kind of fighting it in some ways. Like, I think, like Kyle was saying about being, you know, trying to be unpredictable too. It's like the last piece of music, like the dancers love it. It's like so beautiful. But then I also trying to put some like toughness against that too. So I totally forgot your question.
No,
sorry.
This is good too, because I like this direction, because maybe we could talk a little bit about what Merce's relationship to music is for anyone that isn't familiar, because it's quite interesting and different to me.
It really is just, it occupies the same space at the same time, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he would, whichever composer he was working with, he'd be like, I'm making a dance that's 33 minutes long. And so then they would make a piece that's 33 minutes long and hear it during the show, which is what I did to the dancers this week too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did we see on Friday?
Crowd Spacer,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And just like as always, James Whiteside was telling me, we heard it for the first time in the rehearsal today, and here we go. It's a very, for classical ballet dancers, a totally different experience.
Yeah, and I think they felt like it was going to shock them, but then they realized, oh no, I'm busy.
Right.
They're thinking about all their rhythms and their space and all of that. So it they were fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's also a huge amount of trust though that, I mean, I got to meet Merce a handful of times, but there has to be a certain amount of trust that you have in the composers that you're collaborating with, because I don't really feel like that much of the music was ever that melodic, right? So like there had to be some kind of conversation and repartee and kind of like understanding of like, this is my world, I welcome you into my world, let's have a conversation and let's make sure that the work, you know, serves both of us in some way. I think that's like...
Yes, but it's also that chance element in that for him it was never really about taste, it was about the possibility of what could happen, and so when two things came together, there was the opportunity for something to be produced that outside of what he could have thought of. And so it was always just like, is this going to work? And when it did, it stayed in the repertory for a long time. And when it didn't, it disappeared. And sometimes your favorite dances, like movement-wise, didn't survive because of how all the elements came together. Yeah. And then you just hope that some of those parts got put in event material.
Yeah, I feel like, so one work that I made in premiered rather in 2017 was called Dearest Home. It's a work that was performed in some ways in silence, always rehearsed in silence. The dancers still to this day have never heard the music, but there was a score that was composed to accompany it. But the only way you heard the score is if you had those silent disco headphones, and that's the only time you heard it. But I had heard it several times well after I was far enough along in the choreographic process. But it's interesting to think about, like the control that I didn't have over an audience, whether or not they took the headphones off to see, you know, how the dancers are responding in silence and put them back on, because I'm kind of thinking about the totality of the evening or the work. So I have no control over the way an audience is kind of living in whatever that musical collaboration is meant to be.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Can we bring that to Vail? I want to see this piece. Let's go back. We kind of started to touch upon process, and you know, you're saying you create phrases on yourself, you'll improv, and then utilize that for the work later. Kyle, where do you start? Do you like to sketch out phrases on your own body first to get an idea before you enter the room?
It's really option D, all of the above. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes it starts with writing a narrative where I'm really thinking about, in the same way a scientist would kind of create their hypothesis, I'm thinking about just putting down on paper whatever the experiment might be. Mm-hmm. And say, like, so a new work that I'm making for, well, can't say the place. it's really for me thinking about ideas of empathy in relationship to nature and aging. And so all of that are things that I'm kind of like exploring, but I have no idea how it's going to manifest, right? So then I will go in the studio, which sometimes I start with just me going into the studio and improvising and recording it. And I have an amazing assistant, Stephanie Terasaki, who is here with us at Vail, who learns a lot of that material. And then we might kind of go back and forth to find the best way to kind of teach it to other dancers or for her to kind of like get ready to perform it. So that's part of it. And sometimes I'm really making phrases, as one might say, so like a sequence of steps that will kind of go on from, you know, you hear people say, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, all that stuff. I would have maybe made a series of steps that I then teach to dancers or to Stephanie to then teach from there. Or I'll, in the case of like a duet, there'll be some duets in the program that you'll see on Monday. So a lot of that material, I'm really just building on the dancers in real time.
Right.
Or I'm building a score or like a playlist for maybe a year to 2 years, just listening to music in a certain order and allow that to kind of dictate what the choreography might be and the order of the program might be as well. Mm-hmm.
So Melissa, when you do these little improv sections and then you're videoing them, I mm-hmm. presume, how do you decide what to keep and what's gonna where that idea is gonna grow from?
I'm dancing in the work, so I'm really leaning on my own experience as a dancer, instinctually, like what I feel like I can pull off. So the first section is a solo because that's how I started working. Mm-hmm. And then the second section, I really ordered it also based on the text I received from Damian Wetzel. So thank you, Damian, for structuring my dance. I get a text, will you work with Miriam? I'm like, of course. So then I'm like, okay, I'm thinking the next section's a duet for Miriam and I. And then I get a text a month later, can you also add India? And I'm like, great, she's coming in next. So then that second piece, I was adding them. And I know the two of them pretty well. We've worked together a number of times here at the festival. So that was the section that I left for myself to really make here, because, you know, it's really about making stuff here. But I also wanted to be prepared because I don't know what I'm doing. and so that section I've really been making here, and I had an idea for it, but then I sprained my ankle earlier this week, so then it changed, and that having to adjust, I think I really learned from Merce and Pam too, because they are so good at really dealing with what's actually happening in the studio rather than what's just in their head. And so there was some changing and evolving, and that I really made with them, and I'm really grateful to them for that. And I had a bunch of little phrases, and I was just sharing different bits with them, and Miriam's like, stop procrastinating. I'm like, right, okay. And they would just try things. I'm like, okay, awesome. You know, so they really helped support me and make that section. And then the final section, I got another text from Damian, and he was like, will you also work with Sarah Murren? So I'm like, of course. But I need another piece of music now. So I know Sarah, but not super well. And so I made something for her mm-hmm. and taught it to her. And then, you know, it becomes a quartet.
Right. Maybe, Kyle, you can talk about what your process has been specifically for the work you're creating here in Vail.
Yeah, it is somewhat similar in the way that I was able to have some time at the Juilliard School. Damian helped get me a couple hours, where I would either work with the dancers one-on-one or start building material with Stephanie. I think actually that's probably how we started, if I'm looking back. I think Stephanie and I just got in the studio and I started building as much as I could when I kind of had a sense of who the cast was going to be and tried to make material inspired by who those artists were going to be in the space. I did, again, all of those option Ds. I played with the order in a playlist over and over again. I videotaped myself dancing and had Stephanie learn it. I built phrase material on her. She's also dancing in the work. And then as soon as I could kind of try things with the dancers that were going to be dancing the work, then it takes on a whole different kind of life and realization. I think because I'm someone, when I'm working, I really want to ask a dancer how things feel. When does something seem unnecessary? What is necessary? Because I'm not dancing the work. Especially in a ballet idiom, I think so much of it has a lot of these kind of the importance of line and all those types of aesthetics are very key to a ballet dancer in particular. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that the line that I've chosen is one that they really resonate with, because mm-hmm. they're the one, again, on stage, or the photo is going to be of them. My name might maybe be in a caption, but their name is going to be there. Yeah. So I want to make sure that that all connects and that the movement and the lines that we're choosing actually have some kind of continuity.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're... sort of collaborative process with Stephanie is making me think of a question I was asking yesterday to Jamar and Kylie. You know, as dancers, you get near constant feedback. You know, you have the, you know, repertory director and your director and a teacher, coach, whatever. But as choreographers, you don't always get that feedback unless you're seeking it out. So I'm curious what level of feedback you want, or who you're seeking to kind of give you that feedback, or do you just like being on your own?
Well, I'll ask for feedback, and I want to make sure that people are able to feel that they can express themselves honestly. But I think the tricky thing, especially with ballet dancers and dancers that work in repertory companies, so companies that do work primarily of other choreographers over and over again, they're not always given an opportunity to express their opinion and voice. So when you actually ask them, in some ways I feel like they're like, is this a trick question? Like, do you only want me to tell you the good things? And I really want to know and hear from them what really what's working and what's not working. Even Stephanie, being my assistant, I think I keep pushing her because her voice is so important. Mm-hmm. I keep pushing her to actually be more vocal and tell me what her opinion is. But, you know, Stephanie, she's so kind. She's like, you know, that could work, or that could work. You know? So it's interesting hearing that, but then I think there'll be a little moment or nugget where I think she feels like she can actually say, well, I do, you know, Kyle, I do prefer that ending, you know, and I love hearing that because it's really important. Anyone and everyone whose eyes are in this space, I want to know what their perspective is. Yes, I am going to be the one responsible for whatever type of critique the work gets. Mm-hmm. The dancers will be viewed as beautiful because they are, but people may not get the choreography. Right. And if that doesn't work or resonate, that's a lot of that is my fault. So I do take all of their opinions in and try and kind of process it and think about how important it is, not everything they're saying is important, but I'm trying to figure out, I guess, what is important to me, and how is the feedback that they're giving me, how is that leading me towards the way that I feel best represents this work.
Right. Do you guys ever get feedback from a director or someone in the institution? I mean, you're saying Damien is kind of, he's offering, like, wants you to use these people, but mm-hmm. how much...
He hasn't seen the piece yet.
Mm. Yeah, you haven't seen it. Yeah.
Going on stage tomorrow, I mean, the level of trust he gives everyone at this festival is, I mean, something I think I think it's why he's such a great director. I think we've all been involved in dance organizations where the people at the top aren't always the best. So it's...
Name names.
No, but it can. There's a level of control sometimes that's unnecessary, and I think he puts really competent people in place and then trusts them to do their job. And I think that's part of the success of his festival.
Right. Not necessarily someone needing control over your work, but do you ever have someone give parameters? Like, can you please use this piece of music? Can it be less than 10 dancers because we have this other ballet on the program? Like, what level of parameters have you been dealing with, or is it usually just like carte blanche?
Well, two things. One, I want to just, I think the first part of the question, I think for me, Risa Steinberg is someone that I bring into the room whenever I can. I think she's just a brilliant friend and mind and dance icon. So hearing her input, she's not afraid to tell you when something doesn't work. And I love that. I really appreciate that. And most of my collaborators are that way, especially my lighting and scenic designer, Dan Scully. Usually we work together. He usually kind of gives me the honest truth. But parameters, no one's ever told me what music to use. I don't know how I'd respond to that, honestly. I've been commissioned to make a work to certain music before, and I've had to think about whether or not that is in alignment with who I am and how best I can represent whatever that music might be. Mm-hmm. I have gotten certain parameters about the number of dancers that I'm using. Maybe, you know, at like the Ailey company, they'll say, oh, you know, it's great if you don't use the full company because if someone goes out, we're in a tricky situation. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of the ballet companies I've choreographed for it, I feel like I get a kind of sense that I can do most of what I want, but I think more than anything, they give you certain time parameters. I think that's the same thing here. You have to be really kind of considerate with a program that is going well beyond your work. And right. You want to make sure that you're not getting too lengthy in whatever you're creating.
Right. Can we just hear a little bit about what we might expect in your premieres tomorrow night?
Me? Oh,
yeah, what? You go. I don't know what to
yeah.
say.
Yeah. Well, I'm working with Bach Partita on piano. I don't know if it's because of ballet's relationship with piano. Well, most times in class, you're dancing to piano. That I'm much more drawn to the Bach Partita for piano. In this kind of context. So I'm exploring that. I'm working a lot with solos and duets. There are a couple group sections in there as well. I don't really know what else I can say. It's something that I wanted to explore for the last year and some change, but situations being what they can be, and there's more there. I wasn't able to dive in previously. But Damien, again, being just a great kind of champion that he is, was like, yeah, this is a great place to try it out. Mm-hmm. So it gave me an opportunity for me to kind of explore what my movement vocabulary might look like with Partita on piano.
Mm-hmm. And point shoes. I was very excited to see them. me? yeah, I don't know. I don't really know what to say about it. I guess... sort of about the endurance of motherhood, I would say, and kind of an homage to their mom friends that really embraced me at that time as an artist and supported me. So, yeah.
Beautiful. I think we have time to open the floor to audience questions, and we will bring the mic out. We'll start with Jana.
I have two things. I have something I want to say to Kyle, and then I have a question for you too, okay. Kyle. Although I've loved watching you work in the tents with Kyle Abraham's work to Melissa because it's so puzzling to me, and it's really helpful to see you work. But the first thing I want to say to Kyle is a very, very personal thank you for the work you made for the New York City Ballet when we fell. I know it was a chance you took, or at least some people thought so, that they were not on the Marley floor. But to be in that space, it was such a beautiful, beautiful ballet. But I'm sure a lot of people who go to New York City Ballet can share with me how wonderful it was, the way you used the space and the beautiful dancers for us coming back after COVID. And I will never forget it. And I couldn't watch it without tears. I can almost not speak to you now because, so I'll stop that. One other thing involves a question. I think even before I'd seen that, I also want to say I loved your newest work for New York City Ballet too. Very, very wonderful. I saw you at Jacob's Pillow, and it was the first time I'd seen your work, I have to confess. It was quite a while ago, and I loved what I was seeing, but what impressed me that I have never forgotten is that somebody asked you a question about work that was coming, and you told us about a schedule that went out like 2 years or something. There was you had everything planned out for 2 years, so the whatever the question's answer was, I can't do that, you know, until whatever, 3 years. And I came away thinking, wow, this is the most organized choreographer. I always think of that when I mean, I'm sure you have a lot of commissions, but could you speak to how you can do that? You know, how you can plan 2 years ahead of time and have the whole calendar organized. I just would like to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the comments and the question. Part of me wants to address the first comment, but I guess yes, I will quickly. So grateful that that When We Fell resonated with you. Ironically, that conversation I was saying about, you know, trying to kind of surprise an audience or not fall into expectation. The work before When We Fell, which was really kind of for me a study on piano in a lot of ways with the music. So I use Nico Muley, I use Jason Moran, and I think there was one other composer in there that's escaped me because I wasn't planning on talking about it. But that came right after work that used, you know, mostly hip hop and kind of alternative popular music and dance music. So it's great to kind of go from one to the other and kind of play with those different worlds. But my scheduling, yeah, I think for me, I mean, ironically, that must have been maybe before the pandemic, because I think, yeah, the pandemic really kind of shook me up. Prior to the pandemic, my board asked me to make a 5-year plan, and I made an 8-year plan, scheduling everything from 2017, all the way through to 2024 or something like that. But then the pandemic happens, maybe 26, and the pandemic happens, and all of these works that I started working on, scheduled to premiere 2020, 21, 22, they all wind up premiering on the same year. And then the second the curtain goes down, people go, "What's next?" And I'm like, "I just gave y'all 6 years worth of work." You know, so that's really kind of played with my mind in a way. I'm still trying to plan things out in that way. I think I have a, you know, I'm really grateful for an amazing executive director of my company, Sydney Liggett Dennis, who helps support those endeavors that I want to take on both in my company, but also when I'm leaving and going and doing these commission projects. So I try and be really thoughtful about the number of commissions I can take on in a year, and then think about a timeline that best works for the company. And with that, some of that means expanding upon this idea of a repertory model. So I'll bring in outside choreographers. In the past, we've done work from Trisha Brown, works from Doug Verone, B.B. Miller, the list goes on and on. And then while doing that, I will also be making an evening length work for the company. So a work that spans a little over an hour or so in length with maybe a narrative or two ideas kind of weaving together. Again, that idea of a hypothesis kind of coming together to create a work. So I'm doing all of that in a way. So at the moment, I think I have all my plans up to 2026. But then my goal is to take at least 6 months off in 2027. That's my goal. I mean, I cannot predict if there'll be another pandemic or how America or Europe will respond to that pandemic. But that's my goal at this point, to kind of have everything kind of timeline like that.
Now you're looking forward to a vacation in 4 years.
I know. I was supposed to go on a vacation or take time off in 2025, and then a friend, a really, really important friend, asked me to make a work for her, and she's now taking time off. So I already started scheduling everything knowing that I was going to make that work. So now it's just a little bit of like, okay, that timeline for personal time has shifted a bit, but make it work.
Being this prolific, are there ever moments where you're like, the muse is not coming to me? Or have you scheduled this because you feed off that sort of constant creation?
Well, I think it seems somewhat manageable, the timeline that I've set forth. But there are definitely a lot of periods where I don't have any, it's just not coming. The inspiration's not coming. And sometimes I just lay on the floor. I'm just like, it's not coming to me. Or I'll watch the most mundane television. You know, I think everyone that knows me knows I love Love Island UK and Australia. I just watch that show, and I think like that escapism kind of serves me a little bit. But beyond that, yeah, I know I have certain goals, and I love goals. I love timelines too. So I think that really helps me to kind of try and get to wherever I'm hoping the work can be. But I think along with that, ideally, whoever is commissioning the work, or if it's even internally at my company, AIM, there is also that level of support for me to say, this work isn't ready. Can we have a little bit more time? That's a really kind of vulnerable thing to say, and because you don't know if the answer is going to be yes or no. Right. But ideally, when you express those things that you don't feel ready, everyone that you've hopefully put around you will help you to kind of shine and help you feel supported.
Great. Who's got the mic? Jonna, pass the mic down.
Hi. I was actually wondering if you both could talk about your work together, meaning several years ago, I remember that Melissa Toogood guested for Kyle in a piece. I can't even remember when that was, but
Live the Realist MC.
Yes.
At the Walker Art Center.
Yeah.
That's right. Could you guys maybe share a little bit about that?
Great question.
Yeah. Do you want to go first, Mel?
Sure. I mean, Kyle is one of my all-time favorite dancers. And when you reached out to me about maybe working together, I was like, yes, I need to make this happen. I actually love going into work that's already made because it helps me get to know the person's work. And so that's what happened in this situation. But you were also getting extremely famous at the time. And like, I remember dress rehearsal, you had to leave, even though you were in that show, and fly to go receive an award somewhere and then come back and finish the rehearsal before the show. So I feel like I'm not done working with you.
Part two, yeah.
But I don't know what else to say. It was such a short time, but so impactful. I love being in the studio with your dancers. They were so generous and really know what they're doing, and I learned a lot from them. And even though we were only in the studio together for such a short time, they're people that I've really stayed, I feel connected to.
Oh,
and I think that's because of the environment you create. And I just love your work.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, very mutual. I think, you know, it was wonderful for so many reasons to have Melissa with us, but I think one of them was also just seeing the way that my dancers could kind of like learn from her. She also comes in and teaches company class for us, so like that's a whole other aspect to our working relationship. But it also kind of extends this idea of what's possible. I think watching Melissa's, I actually do laugh sometimes because things that she can do, it really seems like it's not humanly possible. So thinking about how not only dancers can be this close to her as she's doing these kind of like feats of nature, but then also how she helps to kind of teach and share that information to make other dancers feel like they can do that is part of the joy in having someone like her in my space or in our shared space.
I love that. I mean, like, Melissa's just been taking classical ballet dancers who know probably nothing about MERS now for years, and just
really modern dance in general, honestly. Yeah.
And like, we have to take our shoes off?
It's
Miriam split her foot open so bad during crowd spaces this week. I'm like, you're initiated. She's like so excited, but it hurts.
Yeah. Well, it's clearly like such a gift that you have, that you are able to communicate that world to them. And get them to inhabit it.
I think Cunningham can be misinterpreted in a lot of ways. Like, I learned a lot from Merce because I can pick up movement quickly and retain a lot of information, but that didn't always, I wasn't always the one that his eye went to, even though I was like doing it the most correct. And I learned a lot from that. Mm-hmm. I learned so much from watching him as a director. And, you know, I can be doing parts for him that 12 other women had done before, and he never compared me to anybody else. He really just looked at what I showed him in the studio. And I think that's the only way to keep the work alive, if you're going to keep doing it, is to really look at the person in front of you that's doing it, how they're doing it. And there's so many ways to bring forth the integrity of the particular work. Like, something that works on one dancer, or it's something that one dancer can get away with, another can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, knowing, I for me, that's a very creative process. And that's, like, really where I get excited more than choreographing, is rehearsal directing. And, like, I love making events, though, with Merce's work. So how I organize things and casting, like, I love that sort of stuff. That's mm-hmm. I find that to be a very creative endeavor. And, I enjoy that, and you know, I mean, if you're interested in the work, to me, I'm like, then you're doing it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Melissa, I'd like you to expand a little bit on your experiences as a working mother,
and
it seems to me there's more and more people bringing small children, performers and choreographers, to Vail. Are you lobbying Damien to create a child care center to help you?
We actually, before 2020, I had a meeting with some people from Vail Valley Foundation about how to do that. But then, you know, 2020 happened. Not as many kids have been coming out either. But, no, everyone's been so supportive. I think initially the whole, like, being a mom thing, I always thought I had to retire to do that. And then when I started working more with ballet companies and I'd be in the dressing room and see people pumping and stuff, I was like, oh, it's physically possible. I just don't personally have the infrastructure to support that, so I have to figure that out on my own. So I have an amazing partner that really helps. And like I was kind of saying before, when I did have my amazing little child over there, Hudson, there were a number of dance moms that kind of came out of the woodwork and just embraced me, particularly friends Miley and Amy. It's not easy, especially in my area of dance. I mean, and Pam Tanowitz has been incredible. Like, shoot, our rehearsals, we don't work full time, so you know, that's a different challenge financially and all of that. But we would be rehearsing, and we'd take a break based on when I was like, I need to pump now, or I need to go feed. And she's also a mom, and so that really helped. She made my part for me in four quartets when Hudson was 3 months old. But she, I mean, we have such a long working relationship, and she's so talented as a choreographer that she can be flexible in that way with my availability. But in terms of making work, it really informed the piece that I'm making, because most of it happened with him in the studio with me. I was just like, okay, making blanket forts and how can I keep him occupied? And he loves improvising, so I was like using him, like, okay, now you're Miriam and you're gonna be here. And like, but it really was, he's been a part of the process for me. Talking about you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Hi. Unfortunately, I'm leaving Monday morning, so can't see your work. So hope to get
you
to something
it.
In New York.
It's streaming. That's how I'm going to watch it, too.
Oh, Monday night.
Yeah.
Right. I will. Yeah. Hopefully, I'll kind of on a plane. But anyway, so my question is about, I love dance because of the music. I love all different kinds of music. I love music with melody. I love the costumes, the lighting, in addition to the dance. So my question is, when I see it, when I get to a piece that I don't love the music, and it, when I learned a couple years ago, when the music comes later, like that just was a whole brain adjustment to learn that the music comes, you know, very late. So what can you say to the audience to help people like me, you know, love a piece but separate, maybe love the dance but not love the music? Or how do you separate it? Or
I don't think it's always about loving something either. You know, I mean, I think it's just about having an experience. So Crowd Spacer, the Cunningham excerpt that I staged for Friday, I'll never forget one of my first tours with Merce Cunningham Dance Company. We re-premiered the piece because it was made in the 90s. It was the first piece he made with computer. And then we brought it back in the 2000s. And I was doing kind of a situation like this after a show with the composer, John King. And an audience member was like, oh, the music was so difficult. And then partway through, it changed. And then I really, like, loved it, and I grew with the piece. And he's like, the music didn't change, you did.
Wow.
So, and yes, like, you, if you just allow yourself to sit with something, and I think especially with Cunningham, a lot of people need to see it many times to grow in that way. So, I don't know, I think it's just about being open.
Yeah, I think it's that. It's also just an aspect of just life and reality, not to be like super hippie with it, but like, if you're on the New York subway and you're having an amazing conversation, or you're holding your partner's hand, if there's an ignorant conversation next to you, it doesn't make you love your partner any less. Or if you're in the park and you're like exploring nature and loving the nature that you're kind of surrounded by, but then someone starts playing music on their sound system that really interferes with the way that you're experiencing nature, it doesn't make you love nature any less. I think it's just the way in which you choose to see and experience something. There's always something to take away from it. And it's not about liking or not liking the thing. I think it's just really allowing yourself to experience the thing and think about whatever memory you may have. It may lead to the most amazing conversation about like the most ridiculous music that you heard watching this dance, then leads you to talk to someone and have the most organic and inspired conversation that you would have never thought you would have had.
That is such a beautiful way to end. Thank you both for joining us. Everyone, come see their premieres tomorrow night. And if you can't make it to the show, stream it.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Conversations on Dance is part of the Acast Creator Network. For more information, visit conversationsondancepod.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.